Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Faith Tech Podcast. This is a podcast where we're talking about this fascinating, intriguing, interesting. I don't know why I just went into that voice. Intersection of technology, theology, and culture. And I'm James Kelly. Have the amazing honor to lead this really cool global tech community for Christ we call Faith Tech. And I've been sitting with John Dyer. We're here in Dallas. John is a professor at the Dallas Theological Seminary. He's been a web developer for years, been thinking at this intersection of faith, technology, culture, theology. And I am picking his brain to try to take everything I can out of it and try to understand, you know, how does God created us? And what role does technology play in the way we create it? And it being used. And we have been diving into scripture, going through this narrative of reflection, moving into rebellion. And now we want to move into this beautiful element of redemption, this anticipation towards this amazing story that we see in Jesus Christ. So let's dive in. John, here we go. Let's continue on. We've looked at reflection, we've looked at rebellion, and now we want to dive into redemption. And there are these amazing stories post-rebellion, post-fall now, that have great lessons for us around the use of technology, God's creation in technology, and so many of them are also setting us up for this amazing climax of the story of Jesus restoring, bringing this restorative message and act to the world. And so walk us through some of those stories now. Post Cain and Abel, what happens after that, that we can glean now to understand technology, its role, us as creators with it?
Yeah. So when we come out of the garden and then we come out of some of these early stories, What I want to portray, what I want us to see, is that God deeply values the things that we make, that he continues to do that. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be walking through the Old Testament, anticipating this Savior that would come. And I think if we were just looking at the story broadly speaking, we would see that God's promises get bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm. And the way that he's going to fulfill those promises gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Mm. It starts out with all of Israel, and then it's a faithful remnant of Israel. And it's this, maybe this king or maybe this priest, and it starts to point in a particular direction. Mm. But along the way, I think what we do is, if we're trying to bring our world closer to God's world, if we think about the, sometimes people talk about the horizons of the text and the horizon of our world, we're right in flat Dallas where we can see the horizon everywhere. We're trying to bring those things together. So we're trying to bring our world in. And so what we're going to do is look at some of the stories that we know so well, look at them with technological eyes from today. Mm. And I think what that does is it lets us be saturated in the Bible so that we can look at our world biblically by looking at the biblical world technologically. So let's start with Noah's Ark, right?
Classic.
You've got little kids. You've taught them Noah's Ark about the animals and the rainbow.
Two by two.
Exactly. What we kind of miss, I think, in this story is just how much God doesn't need Noah at all, right? Mm. God looks at humanity and he sees the depth of their sin. And he's grieved by this. Mm. And he's like, I'm going to get rid of them, but decides not to. And this is the God that can part the Red Sea. This is the God that can raise from the dead. Right. This is the God that can do anything. It can stop time. But the way that he saves the human race, he gives Noah instructions on how to build something. Isn't that weird? It doesn't make any sense that God would do that kind of thing. Hmm. And so here, God gives Noah this command to actually make something. And so like we talked about with the what Adam and Eve make, that they try to cover their own sin and God does something for them, that portrays Christ. I think here, you know, Noah is seen as this person who's going to bring peace. That's what his father names him, that he's going to bring peace. And he's this righteous man on this construction of wood, saving humanity from death and destruction and the onslaught of God's wrath against humanity, that he does that. And yet he ultimately fails in the end, right? He still needs something more. And so he does save humanity. He does push away the wrath of God in some way. And yet he's following it. Again, points us to our need for something deeper to ultimately solve this. But I think this is God going out of his way saying, wow, I'm going to save your souls. I'm going to resurrect your bodies, but I care so deeply about the things that you make that I'm going to bake it into every single story over and over and over again. And I think that should give us tremendous encouragement that the things we're making are worth us thinking about and worth us keeping close watch over at the same time.
Yeah, and I'm just so encouraged by this story too, because for me, what it teaches me is that God goes, look, here is details. Like I'm gonna lay out details for you on how to create this, but he's looking ahead and he knows what's gonna happen with it. And the whole time Noah's like, dude, I don't get it. Why am I exactly like, are you sure that flood's coming? Like it almost as if it's like, it seems so unbelievable that I would be making this thing for some bigger purpose that's never happened before, that seems, it is destructive, but it seems like it doesn't make any sense. And this is so how I love that, because so many times we create in a way where we don't know what purpose ultimately God has in store for it, or we're questioning the purpose that God might have in store for it. But yet, when you look at the story of Noah in the full breadth of the redemptive story of Jesus, we're knowing that God has this huge purpose in mind for it, and his calling is like, Noah, here's the details. Be faithful to create what's right in front of you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a powerful lesson, especially for our community. There's so many of us are creators and builders. Mm-hmm. And it's like, be faithful to what's right in front of you. Like we stand before God and it's like, well done, good, faithful servant. Mm-hmm. It's like, not did you create this massive thing that were you faithful with what I put right in front of you? And to me, that's this amazing story of Noah. Love that.
Yeah. And I think you're saying, be faithful that you have. And then the very next story is in some ways the opposite of that, right? Where the Tower of Babel. Where it seems like humanity is trying to, again, live apart from God. And again, take their creative powers and direct them toward themselves, to lift themselves up on high, to reach the heights of God in some way. And so they're doing the opposite of that. They're also making, but this creative power is getting distorted in some way.
Hmm. Yeah, and that's the whole story of Tower of Babel is really quite powerful, right? Because you have this story where suddenly this new technology is introduced, brick. You're like, brick. They're like, yes, brick. What are we going to do with this, right? And our first thought is, in this story, wow, new technology. How do we become like God or reach the heavens to compete almost or replace or what's the language we use, substitute, right, for God? And I remember in the scriptures, it says, God said nothing they proposed to do will now be impossible for them, you know? And that word do, I think, is that the connection with the word make as well? Does that bring us back to even the Genesis account?
Yeah, there's a couple of different, you know, words that God uses for make for what he does and what humans use for make when Adam and Eve are making their own. And so we see this wordplay in the Hebrew that we don't always get to see in English, and you know, the kind of brick making and mortar covering that's very similar to what Noah was doing in his story with making his ship waterproof. But I think what I think is also very interesting about this story is that God's reaction to this, you know, he comes down and he condescends to us to see what we're doing. But God, I think could have just destroyed this and said, this is a good technology. I'm going to show you how to make a good one. And I'm going to destroy the evil ones. But he doesn't do that.
Right.
Remember when we talked about humanity's first thing that they make, that Adam makes, is language? That's the level that God operates at the level of language. And here he's not destroying them, but what he's doing is calling them back to their original purpose. So remember, they seem to all be wanting to congregate and not go out, not go explore all the goodness of God's creation and see all these lands and vistas and new areas. Instead, they want to congregate. And so by changing their languages, then they spread and then they multiply. And so God is calling us back to what we were made to do. So I think even here he is, you know, disrupting technology. that's a big word we love to use.
There you go. Yeah.
Disrupt. Here he's disrupting their technology, but I think back for the original purpose of what he made us to be able to do. So here again, I think God is showing tremendous care for us, even when we go astray.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it brings me back to the fig leaves of like, we created this thing. And instead of just being like, no, that's like this, he shows us kind of another way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's great. So Tower of Babel, that happens. I think too, there's this great story with the Law of Moses that kicks in.
Yeah, I think this is a really great place for us to just camp out for a little bit, is all the things that happen around this story. So, you know, with Moses, Neil Postman points out that in the Ten Commandments.
And who's Neil Postman?
So Neil Postman's a student of Marshall McLuhan's, great writer on technology, and sometimes seems a little grumpy. Like, it seems like he wants to, you know, go back to the 1800s when people read but still have antibiotics. You know, it's difficult to pin down, but he really has just some great insight into what was happening through the 70s, 80s, and 90s before he passed away. And he's anticipating a lot of what we'll do with the internet. But his comment as a person with a Jewish background is to say that when we see these ethical laws that are around the Sumerian world, around the time when God gives the Ten Commandments, now a lot of them have these ideas of don't kill and don't murder, or don't commit adultery. But what's so odd in the Ten Commandments is it also has a command about how to use images. And he points out how odd it is that in a set of ethics, there would be a command about our use of media. And so I think this begins to portray this idea that God cares deeply about the way that we use not just technology broadly, but also how we portray things through media that's baked into the Ten Commandments.
Super interesting. Now, again, going to the Ten Commandments. Now, I've seen too, and I've heard it said, and I probably learned this from you too, was the invention around the phonetic alphabet. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go back into that history and you're like, wait, hold on, did God align this great invention and then leverage it to actually expand the communication of his law and teaching at this time?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like when we try to put the history together, and this is rough, I don't want to make a huge deal about it, right? Yeah. But it seems like there's a shift from, you know, pictographic languages to this idea of an alphabet, to sounds, which just allows a ton more flexibility. And this is happening somewhere in that range of 1500 BC, around the time when we think that Moses might have been coming out of Egypt. Mm. And so in a way, this is God, you know, advancing technology. But there's also this deep meaning in writing things down. So a lot of the stories that we've already talked about Adam and Eve and about Abraham, these are all passed down orally. Mm. But at this stage where we start to write things, you see this phrase, "it is written." And if you think about today, we can go get paper and it's cheap and emails are cheap and texts are cheap. Mm. But writing something was pretty significant, right? Mm. Because it's expensive and it's costly. So you only write down things of great significance. And so again, the technology does something. It communicates, it transfers information,
right?
But also carries great meaning, that you write down things that actually matter. So it says, "it is written," over and over and over again. These are all the really important things. Mm. Then we see a great cultural disruption with this too, with the idea of writing, that that knowledge used to always come from other human beings, right? That you would always go ask the oldest person in the room because they have the fullest hard drive. They are your Google. Right? Your elders. But once things can be written outside of the human mind, and that even a young person can go access that, that really changes authority structures. It changes cultures. It changes who you go to and how you get information and who you trust. So you do see this big, profound move there. But we also see what seems like God, using technology again to move along his people.
Yeah. And that even makes me think today, like, pre-internet, where did we take our questions, right? And if you stop and think about it, it was like pre-internet. Okay, I took it to someone that I profoundly trust. So it's like specifically like deeper, darker questions or concerns of life. You would take it to someone you profoundly trust, maybe an elder, someone that's been through life to try to learn from them. Or I think you just took it to the grave. You didn't tell anybody. But I do think the internet, the introduction of this search ability, has now given up this new space for us to ask those really deep questions. And I think that's really useful to think about, because now when you actually look at Google and you go, okay, I'm going to search something really dark, like I'm going to kill myself, or I'm full of hate towards this person. And, you know, I think that's where, again, thinking deeply on the impact of the medium is like, what is Google saying? Right. And now it's like we're seeing this shift too. And I'm trying to understand this right now is, are we also now putting those that are what we consider almost the experts of society greater than, and they don't know us, greater than the ones that might know us, but we might not consider as much of the expert? Mm. And what impact is that having on us? Because someone that knows me really deeply may not be able to give all the statistics over there, but they know me deeply, so they can customize a piece of wisdom for me. It's like customized wisdom versus, like, I feel like this posture we're taking a lot right now is we're taking from the experts that may not necessarily even know us.
Yeah. And I think you're bringing up so many great points. I mean, one of them is that once information is not just in human minds, that enables all kinds of wonderful things about knowledge about medicine and math and about God's creation. But it also allows us to decouple relationships in some way. And so many of us know more about celebrities than we know about our physically proximate neighbors, right? Because it's so much easier to consume those pieces of information. I think you also brought out the idea of, I think, the difference between wisdom and information, that it's not very hard to get facts out of Google, to just ask questions of Google. But it's a lot harder to know what to do. How should I actually live? So if you have a smart speaker right now, you know, you can ask it almost any fact and it usually can figure it out. But if you ask it, what should I do with my life? It has no idea how to answer those things. So there's such a profound difference between knowledge and information, so much so that in Plato's writing, you know, he writes down a story that Socrates told about the invention of writing, and that it was considered to be something that was actually going to be bad for people because it would give them information but not wisdom. And so this is why Socrates, you know, in the legend, didn't write anything, that he always wanted it to be in-person Socratic dialogue because he thought we would learn best in community and with each other, and he didn't want to just have people read books. But God still values it enough to do it. So he's actually the one that's commanding us to write these things down. So he's not saying run away from this, but to be aware of what's in this technology and what it values. So what we've been saying pretty consistently is to say technology always has a function, but it also has this meaning both for us individually and for us corporately.
Which is fascinating when you take, you go to 2 John and 3 John, right? And John's like, look, I'd rather not use paper and ink here. You know, I'd rather come to you and talk face to face so that my joy may be complete. Yet he still wrote.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he knew that medium was incredibly important. And he may not have known that for the next couple thousand years, this was going to be instrumental in helping us know Jesus and understand the Lord and follow his ways. But there was still an indication that he was saying, look, there is something that is more connected to joy for me, which is being with you face to face.
Yeah. I think a lot of these things that are happening throughout the Old Testament, throughout the Hebrew Bible, are pointing us to this need for God is communicating to us through the scriptures, but he's ultimately going to communicate it to us in some type of embodied way that we can talk about a little bit later. I also think the Old Testament begins to hint at the scale of technology. When we often think about, you know, sin, we think about individuals. Like, I punch James, right? And that's wrong. Or I steal from James, and that's wrong. But there are some Old Testament laws that I think point to, again, the scale of technology and how it can be across a whole system. You know, we sometimes use the word justice, but we also use the word like systemic justice, and we see that. So let me quote you, give you an example of one of them.
Yeah.
One of them is at a simpler level. This is a little law from Deuteronomy 22:8. It says, when you build a new house, make a parapet around the roof so that you may not bring the guilt of bloodshed on your house if someone falls from the roof.
What's a parapet?
Parapet is basically like a handrail. right? A little wall up there. So if you go up on a top of a building and there's a little rail around it,
right?
That's what would protect
that
you.
That seems wise.
So on the one hand, this is saying, hey, you makers, you have an ethical responsibility to consider the ways in which this might hurt people.
Wow.
And so even as we're making, we are not God and we can't know every possible downside. Yeah. But I think we do have a responsibility not to just say maximize profits and never think about the other side of it, to build in safety measures. Now, we live in a sadly litigious society that can go over the other direction as well. But I think this is God saying you as makers have this deep ethical responsibility to consider the ways your things might be used either on purpose or on accident. And then one of the other ones that is repeated, you know, throughout, you know, the Levitical law, but we see it show up. The prophets speak about these things, and so does Proverbs. So it's really throughout the whole Old Testament. It's something about the idea of not using unjust scales. So sometimes they're called, you know, used honest weights or dishonest weights or an abomination to God. The Lord detests dishonest scales, but accurate weights find favor with him. And when we think about it, you know, this is just a weight of how much, say, food you're going to buy or something like that. When we think about a tool like that, that if an individual sword lets you kill one person, that a scale lets you cheat a whole city. It's a systematic evil that lets you cheat everyone. And so when we think about today, most of our most powerful technologies that we take advantage of today, they're powerful because they're at scale, because they're able to affect all kinds of people. But that same power is what is so deeply disturbing to us, that you know, Facebook and Google and all these technologies know so much about us, and yet they do have an ethical responsibility not to misuse those same powers. So I think God is giving us hints and commands about how our power is going to grow over time. And we're certainly there now, where our power is often so big that we choose power, you know, over people oftentimes. And we maximize profit over, you know, what might be broader human flourishing. So again, the Old Testament is telling us in these ethical commands about our huge responsibility.
And I think what's so beautiful about that is, to me, there's the difference even between ethical and redemptive is like, ethical is, you know, kind of a praxis. This is a Praxis Labs, is this community of believers that are trying to create companies in a very redemptive way. And they teach a lot about how entrepreneurship can be exploitative, ethical, or redemptive. And I love their language because they define exploitative, and I've been thinking about this in the context of technology a lot. There's exploitative technology, which is like, I win, you lose. I'm going to create in such a way to, you know, profit from you at the expense of you. And then you have ethical, which is like, I win, we win. So it's still good. But then really redemptive, when you think about redemptive technology, I think the difference to me is I sacrifice, we win. And that's really powerful for me when we think of creating technology. And you see this in some of these stories, right? Is creating technology in a way like Noah, right? I'm going to sacrifice my work, my image with culture, like the way that I'm perceived amongst all my people who they thought he was nuts. I'm going to sacrifice for what I'm creating. I'm going to sacrifice for God. And I think that's a really powerful message in all this when I think of redemptive, you know? So amazing. We've got this, you know, we've worked through now reflection, worked through rebellion, we've worked through redemption. And there's all these beautiful stories, these almost stories also pointing to this amazing work of Jesus and the life he lived, his death on the cross made of wood, his coming back to life, and this for us. And there's even some great stories after that that tie into this restorative, restoration element of the work of that God is doing. And so let's pick that up on the next episode. Well, thanks for listening, guys. We're a brand new podcast. So if you know someone that you think would be intrigued by this conversation, if you could share with them, that would be amazing. Also, you can rate this show on whatever podcast platform you're on. And lastly, If you want to continue this conversation with others, join a Faith Tech community. Just go to faithtech.com. There's people now all around the world that are thinking more deeply, putting their amazing, unique skills to work for God's glory. I hope to see you in one of those cities. Grace and peace.